Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
The Quilted Bananas program plays every Sunday, 10 to 11 a.m. with news, views and music.
A collective of presenters, advertisers, community events and discusses news of interest to lesbians, queer women and non-binary folk.
We have interviews about past and future sports and cultural events, politics, films, art shows.
The program is sponsored through the generosity of the Rural Foundation.
And it plays every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m. on Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this weekend's edition of Quilted Bananas. It is, what day is it? Sunday the 19th of July, 2026. Quilted Bananas is a radio show for the queer, intersex, lesbian, trans, tapui, MB, diverse, bisexual, asexual, and actual and literal and metaphorical nanas, depending on how you want to pronounce it. So today, we're brought to you by the Rural Foundation. Today I've got an interesting subject, but I'm just going to start off with a quick community notice. From Te Puna Maturanga, the National Library, have an upcoming free public event on homosexual law reform happening at the National Library called Through the Collections, 40 Years of Homosexual Law Reform. And that's going to be on Saturday, the 1st of August, 2026, between 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And it's going to have a whole load of hands-on activities, screening of a Move Thin End of the Wedge, collection viewing, all sorts of amazing stuff going on. So get yourselves along there. We'll remind you about that again next week as well. So don't worry too much if you've forgotten. But yeah, sounds like it's going to be pretty good. Okay, so today I'm going to, with the help of Kura, have a look at the career, the interesting and intriguing career of Lisa Coleman and Wendy Melvin. And we'll start, in their own words, from Prince and the Revolution's Purple Rain with Computer Blue.
Wendy? Yes, Lisa. Is the water warm enough? Yes, Lisa. Shall we begin? Yes, Lisa.
Boo!
So there we go. That was Computer Blue from Purple Rain, 1984, Prince and the Revolution, and famously starts with the line of Wendy, yes, Lisa, is the water warm enough? Yes, Lisa. Shall we begin? Yes, Lisa. And Wendy and Lisa, so a lot of people have kind of pushed them to one side. Those of us who are old enough or nerdy enough to know a lot about Prince often think of Wendy and Lisa as just really being kind of, you know, the girls in the band. But Lisa Coleman was the daughter, or is the daughter, of a well-respected session musician and a piano player. Wendy Melvin, again, another, also a daughter of a respected session musician. And that's kind of how they know each other, because their dads used to work together on all sorts of things, including like Beach Boys albums, Jackson 5 albums, all sort of stuff. And in 1980, Lisa Coleman, who at that point was 20, was working in an office and giving piano lessons, and a friend of hers knew Prince and knew he was looking for a keyboard player, so convinced him to give her an audition. And she got the job. She got the gig as his new keyboard player and backing vocalist for his Dirty Mind album and tour in 1980. And at that point, Prince was putting together a live band and a studio band. So he basically, the revolution developed from the band that he had that he always worked with in the studio and he always took on tour with him. And the original lineup was Prince, Andre Simone on bass, Bobby Zed on drums, Matt Fink on keyboards, Des Dickerson on guitar, and Gail Chapman on keyboards. And in 1980 and 1981, Des Dickerson and Gail Chapman left the band. Gail Chapman left first, replaced by Lisa Coleman. And then Andre Simone left in 1981, the bass player. He was replaced with Mark Brown. And then in 1983, Des Dickerson left. And the reason he left the band was because he wasn't comfortable with Prince's music. He was quite strong religious beliefs. He wasn't comfortable with the sexuality in the music. And Prince already knew of Wendy Melvoin. And the reason he knew of Wendy Melvoin is because that she had been around them at gigs and things and had done a little bit of backing vocals. And the reason for this is because she was Lisa Coleman's girlfriend. Mm. And Lisa Coleman, so when Lisa Coleman was on tour, Wendy would come and stay with her and would noodle about in the hotel room and stuff and noodle around playing the guitar. And Prince didn't really, he knew she played a bit, but he hadn't really listened. And he heard her playing the guitar in the hotel room and thought, this kid's quite useful, and asked if she'd join rehearsal, and she did. And she joined the rehearsal just as Des Dickerson left. So August the 3rd, 1983, Prince and the Revolution, as they are now known, the Revolution became named on the 1999 album. Lisa Coleman's 23 years old, Wendy Melvoin, 19 years old. And they perform a benefit concert for the Minnesota Dance Theatre. And they have this concert at a place called First Avenue Nightclub in Minneapolis. And the set that they played on August the 3rd included songs Let's Go Crazy, Computer Blue, I Would Die For You, Baby I'm a Star, and Purple Rain. And these were the first live performances of these songs. And this, obviously, these songs went on to become the backbone of the Purple Rain album, which made Prince and the Revolution massive across the world. Just went boom. And the interesting part of this as well is kind of, it's the whole thing's quite a bonkers story. Apparently Prince had told his manager that he wouldn't record another album unless they let him make a film. And the record company were like, no, that's a really poor idea. But eventually they cracked and they let him make this film. And so the film is basically, the plot line of the film is based around the Revolution and Prince, or as he called himself in the film, the kid doing these gigs at First Avenue where they recorded. And on June the 25th, 1984, the Purple Rain album was released. July the 27th, the Purple Rain film was released. And the plot of the film is set in the First Avenue nightclub. We got Prince and the Revolution, or as they were called, The Kid and his band, versus Morris Day and The Time. And they're basically the house bands, and they're trying to compete to get more space on the stage. Morris Day is the kind of the bad guy. He's stirring up trouble by putting together a girl group to compete against The Kid and to replace The Kid on stage. And Wendy and Lisa are in this film, and they are the girls, And Morris Day is stirring trouble by pointing out to them that Prince is refusing to play their music. They're composing tunes and he's not playing it. Lots and lots of drama, blah, blah, blah. If you've ever seen the film, it's very overwrought. It's really only worth watching for the live bits. The rest of it's quite ridiculous. And it ends with the high drama of Prince takes Lisa and Wendy's music and puts words to it and composes this new song, which he announces his first performance on stage live, saying this is a song that the girls wrote, and that song is Purple Rain. So Wendy and Lisa did not write Purple Rain. In the movie, you'd like, they'd imply that they do, but they didn't. Prince wrote Purple Rain, but obviously they're involved in it. And so this is, he plays this, it's a massive hit. Everyone thinks he's fantastic, and then you know, everyone's happy. The kid is a star. This music's fantastic. Morris Day gives up trying to be a troublemaker, and off they go. And the girls have been acknowledged as performers. And it's this again, this stuff's all really interesting because the Purple Rain album, again, kicked off all sorts of different things throughout the States. So I remember listening to Purple Rain when I was 14. And there are a lot of songs that when you actually listen to the words, you think, oh, this is a bit bit strong. So most famously, Darling Nikki, which is quite overt in its language about masturbation and all sorts of things. And Darling Nikki, and again, us old fogies will remember this, was the song that started the campaign run by Tipper Gore, Al Gore, the former vice president of the United States. His wife started a campaign to get parental guidance notices put on music that could be considered a bit too risque or aggressive or violent or sexual or whatever. And so you now get, we used to get albums and CDs that had these stickers on them saying parental guidance advised. And that apparently started because she overheard her daughter listening to Darling Nikki and thought, I'm not sure my kids should be listening to this because it's a bit, yeah, a bit fruity. So again, they kind of have this weird connection. There's some really interesting bits and pieces. So these strange links. Apparently, I didn't know this until the other day, the lead role in Purple Rain, the lead character, the girlfriend, Apollonia, that role was originally offered to Jennifer Beals, and she turned it down because she was going to college. So it could have been Jennifer Beals, now famous star, you know, we know her best for the L word, and being Bette Porter, but she could have been in Purple Rain, who knew? And the woman that did play his girlfriend, Apollonia Cotero, her vocals were actually done by Lisa Coleman because she wasn't a great singer. So Lisa Coleman's actually the singer behind all of this. So kind of all of these funny little loops that going around in it. Purple Rain, 1985, won the Oscar for Best Original Song in Song Score. So technically, again, Prince and the Revolution all share this Oscar. So these are Oscar-winning musicians. Prince then famously goes on to make, at this point, all of his albums kind of veer quite dramatically in terms of their style. So he went from 1999, which was quite poppy, Purple Rain is like pretty straight up rock. And then he comes up, next album's Around the World in a Day, which is kind of almost 60s psychedelia. Kind of, it used to throw you for a complete loop. You get the new album and go, what the hell? And you'd have to listen to it for a few days to get your head around it. And in 1986, when it was kind of, they're at the peak, Prince and the Revolution are at their peak, they released Parade, which is the soundtrack to another film he made called Under the Cherry Moon, which is considered to be one of the, probably the worst films ever made. It's ridiculous. But again, the music is fantastic. And Parade, Under the Cherry Moon, Parade, I love the album, Under the Cherry Moon has a special place in my heart because it gave the first ever acting gig to Kirsten Scott Thomas. Mm. Yeah, now like massive, massive actor, but that was her first ever gig. Prince saw her and went, she'll do. And so she actually has a Prince song on her Desert Island Discs because this changed her life. And obviously the Parade became a massive album again. First single from Parade was Kiss. Famously then, you know, the lyric Little Girl Wendy's Parade. So the video is just Prince, a dancer, and Wendy Melvoin playing the guitar. And really, you saw this kind of thing that they became this really kind of tight group. When you thought about Prince and the Revolution, a lot of the time you thought about Prince and Wendy and Lisa. And like, so that's the reason for the picture I used on that we put in with the Facebook, Quilted Bananas Facebook page was from a cover of Rolling Stone, where Prince, who's famously shy, didn't really want to be interviewed, but he let Wendy and Lisa speak for him. The connection between Prince and Wendy and Lisa is so complex. Wendy Melvoin has an identical twin sister, Susanna Melvoin. Susanna Melvoin was engaged to Prince in 1986. The song, one of the most famous songs written by Prince, which was made famous by Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You, was actually written for Wendy Melvoin's sister for a band that she had. So the original recording of that was done by her and her band. She also co-wrote some of the songs on Sign of the Times. She became one of the backing singers. So this comes this really kind of complex interweaving. They, Wendy and Lisa, both have brothers who are musicians who played alongside Prince and contributed to his albums. But at the end of 1986, the Revolution disbanded. It was bizarre because they were kind of at their absolute peak and suddenly, boom, they're gone. And apparently, rumour has it, I don't know how true this is, that this is partly due to the fact that Prince was getting a bit uncomfortable with his backing band becoming as important as him and as influential as him, and he was feeling a little bit iffy about it. So off they went, and the next album, Sign of the Times, 1987, was a pure Prince album. But again, if you actually are nerdy enough, like me, you realise if you're listening to Sign of the Times, a lot of the songs on that, you can tell that they're influenced by Wendy and Lisa and Susanna Melvoin. So Susanna wrote Starfish and Coffee with Prince from Sign of the Times. If I Was Your Girlfriend from Sign of the Times apparently is about Prince being very jealous of the fact of how close the twins, Wendy and Susanna, were. And he had this bit of a thing about the fact that he wasn't as close to Susanna as her twin sister was. The songs I Can Never Take the Place of Your Man and Strange Relationship have both been lined up to be performed by Wendy and Lisa on another album that got shelved. So we have all of these, and there are four unreleased songs that were written by Wendy and Lisa. This point, Lisa Carmer's 27, Wendy Melvoin's 23, and they go off into their own solo career and release their first album. And this next song is from their album. This is a song called Sideshow.
What you want, what you need to see.
So there we go. So that was from Wendy and Lisa's first solo album, released in 1987, called Wendy and Lisa. And they then went on to, they released this album with, which has got a couple of songs on it, which are actually about Prince, which are interesting. Next album was called Fruit at the Bottom. And Fruit at the Bottom is actually quite a hard album to get your hands on. It's not on any streaming services for some reason, but it is probably their most interesting and funkiest album. And I was just saying to Kura in the break that Wendy and Lisa got quite a lot of criticism because that people used to say, oh, they just sound like Prince. And the answer to that was like, no, Prince sounded like them. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to Prince music, you will notice that the music that he, that the Prince and the Revolution produced between 1984 and 19, I always count Sign of the Times as a semi-revolution album, 1987, sound quite different from what he does afterwards. And again, that's kind of a lot of that is the influence of Lisa Coleman and Wendy Melvoin. They both grew up in very musical families. They were the ones who introduced Prince to Joni Mitchell music, and obviously in the Ballad of Dorothy Parker on Sign of the Times, there's a famous thing about him saying that her favourite song was Joni singing Help Me, I Think I'm Falling. And that was from Lisa Coleman and Wendy Melvoin used to play Joni Mitchell music to him, and he loved it. So it came from there. 1990, they released an album, another album called Eroica. And then their kind of album career didn't, it hadn't really taken off. So, you know, record companies got a bit, ugh, you know, this isn't going anywhere. Let's not worry about them anymore. And they did a kind of side shift into composing music for movies. And they actually composed some of the music for a film called Toys, a Robin Williams film in 1992. And in 1995, they got their main break, really, in terms of movie music, when they were their songs were introduced to Michelle Pfeiffer. She was making a film called Dangerous Minds. And Dangerous Minds is probably best known for the Coolio song Gangster's Paradise. Mm. But the other main song on it is a song called The Life, This Is The Life, which is a song from Wendy and Lisa's first album, which is used as part of the main theme for the film Dangerous Minds. So I'm just going to go quickly into another song, which is a song from their last studio album, Eroica. And this one is quite interesting because you actually hear most of the time Wendy's the one doing the singing, but this one is very much Lisa Coleman heavy song, and it's called Don't Try to Tell Me. So this is from their album Eroica in 1990.
Thank you.
That was from Eroica, their third studio album. And as I said, kind of at this point, the albums were selling okay, but not doing amazingly well because kind of the public just didn't really know what to do with them. So they were getting more involved in soundtrack writing. And in the mid-90s, they started working on an album and some various movie soundtrack projects with Trevor Horn, the ZTT producer, the guy behind Frankie Goes to Hollywood and all of those kind of things. And this is where irony becomes quite astonishing. So they're recording an album with Trevor Horn, and this album has never been released. I think you can get kind of weird pirated copies of it some places, because Trevor Horn and his, excuse me, partner shelved the album because they weren't aware of the fact that Wendy and Lisa were actually a couple, a lesbian couple. And when they found out, he was so horrified that he immediately went, yeah, I can't work with you, you need to go. But he owned the masters, so he owns this album, which has never been released. And I had a friend who worked as a backing singer in the music industry and told me apparently it was a brilliant album, and she was always really gutted that no one got to hear it. So that was that. The other thing that happened in the mid-90s was, as I mentioned, they had siblings who were very good at music as well. And Jonathan Melvin, Wendy's brother, oh my goodness, in 1996, he was a keyboard player, session keyboard player. And he was the touring keyboard player with the Smashing Pumpkins on their Melancholy and the whatever it is called, I can't remember now, Melancholy and the, it was Infinite Sadness or something, tour to mark one of their most successful albums. And during the course of this tour in 1996, him and one of the other people in the band who were using a lot of alcohol and heroin, one evening, unfortunately, Jonathan Melvin overdosed and died whilst on tour. So obviously this is going to have a massive impact on them and their family. The members of Smashing Pumpkins were very much not allowed to be involved in Jonathan's funeral or any of something like that. But Jonathan Melvin's death, bizarrely, inspired one of the most famous songs that's used very much at funerals, but is a song actually about being a musician, being on tour, being lonely, being bored, being under a lot of pressure, having nothing much to do, and the things that you do in order to just kind of, you know, make sure that you get through the day without, you know, and get through the evening in the loneliness of this pressure of having to perform and whilst, you know, having nothing else to do. And this is a song that's written by Sarah McLachlan, the Canadian singer, called Angel. And Sarah McLachlan read about Jonathan Melvin's death and she wrote this song, and everyone thinks it's about how, you know, if you die, you end up in the arms of an angel. And it's actually about basically getting off your face on heroin and how this, you know, she could understand how this could happen. But she didn't actually know Jonathan Melvin. So again, it's this weird link that because of Wendy, Lisa, Prince, blah, 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 you end up with this song, Sarah McLachlan's song, Angel, written about, say, Wendy's brother dying of an overdose. Mm. So we'll pop that on quickly now before I can segue. Is this annoying Cura by doing things in the wrong order and playing lots of songs? But yeah, Sarah McLachlan's song Angel from 1997.
Spend all your time waiting for that second chance, for a break that would make it okay. There's always some reason to feel not good enough, and it's hard at the end of the day. I need some distraction. Oh, star cold hotel. tired of the straight line, and everywhere you turn, there's vultures and thieves at your back. The storm keeps on twisting. You keep on building the lies that you make up for all that you lack. It don't make no sweet madness, all this glorious sadness that brings me to my knees in the arms of the angel. Fly away from here, from this star.
There you go. That was Sarah McLachlan's song Angel, written in 1997. And it's about, say, Wendy's brother, Jonathan, dying of an overdose in a hotel room in 1996. So with the canning of the album they were making with Trevor Horn, that was kind of their studio band career kind of shelved a little bit. So what they really then got into was recording soundtracks and doing music for TV, a lot of music for TV, tons of music for TV. They worked on shows like Crossing Jordan. They worked on Heroes. They worked on Touched, all sorts of things. To the extent with, like I say, I'm a massive music nerd. I used to work in record stores and things in the UK. I can recognise Wendy Melvoin's guitar style and I'll go, ooh, that sounds like... So, and you start to spot it. And they actually even spent some time in New Zealand. So Neil Finn's album 1-0, which was recorded in 2001, Wendy and Lisa worked on that. So they were in New Zealand with Neil Finn, again, writing a whole bunch of stuff. If you listen to the album and you start to recognise their musical style, you really start to see their influence through it. And so they're doing all of this session work. Session work they're doing includes the working with Seal, working with K.D. Lang, working with Gwen Stefani, Pearl Jam, Sheryl Crow, Grace Jones, Madonna, Liz Phair, kind of anyone, Eric Clapton they've worked with. And probably the two now most famous people that they've worked with, especially for the queer community, Brandi Carlile and Joni Mitchell. As I mentioned, they were the ones responsible for introducing Prince to Joni Mitchell. One of the Joni Mitchell's songs, California, there's this something in there about kissing the sunset pig. And I've always wondered what on earth a sunset pig was. And it was actually explained by Lisa Coleman. Apparently he was a famous cop on Sunset Boulevard, known as the Sunset Pig. So her thing was, I'll even kiss that awful policeman. I'll be so glad to get back to California. So with the Joni Mitchell thing, and again, they've worked on Joni Mitchell albums, Chalkmark and a Rainstorm, which was released, I think, in 1988. They're doing backing vocals on that. And apparently that came about because they were working in the same studio and Joni Mitchell had heard about Prince and them, and they ended up doing backing vocals on one of her songs for her. So they've worked with this ludicrous amounts of people, written songs for ludicrous amounts of people, played on ridiculous amounts of things. And in 1998, they released an album that they just recorded themselves called Girl Brothers, which again is just kind of, you can get hold of it, but it's just them noodling about in the studio. And then they didn't record another album until 2008. They recorded an album called White Flags of Winter Chimneys, which is a reference to Joni Mitchell's song. But apart from that, they've kind of mostly focused on composing for other people. And they also, their relationship broke up. They were together for 20 years, but the relationship broke up. And so that would have been kind of around the early 2000s. And both went on to have relationships with other people. And Lisa Coleman, again, kind of quite fairly quiet and retiring. But Wendy Melvoin then went on to have a relationship with a film director called another Lisa Cholodenko. Lisa Cholodenko has made the film High Art from 1998. The Kids Are All Right, 2010. She also was behind the TV series Olive Kitteridge. And most entertainingly, she did direct an episode of The L Word. She wrote an episode of The L Word. Directed an episode of The L Word from March 2005, and it's called Lynchpin. And in this particular episode, Shane and Jenny are looking for a new roommate, and they're interviewing their roommates. And there's a quite entertaining bit of snark in there. So at one point, they're talking to a potential roommate about their musical tastes, and they're talking about Prince and the Revolution and how they love Prince. But then they say, oh yeah, but who's never as good once Wendy and Lisa left? Mm-hmm. And so the reason that's in there is because then at that point, Wendy's then partner, Lisa Cholodenko, is the director. So again, you get these kind of weird little things. And this link back to Jennifer Beals being in the L Word and almost being in Purple Rain. So there's all these weird little around and circles going around and around in this. By 2004, Wendy and Lisa and Prince had reconciled. So Prince released an album called Planet Earth, and that album has actually got, again, quite a lot of influence of Lisa and Wendy on it, and he got some writing credits on it. But then they went on in 2010 to do something that no other women have ever done before or since. And this is a funny one, but they won the Emmy for the best original main title theme music for the TV series Nurse Jackie in 2010. That has never been won by any other women apart from Wendy and Lisa this one time. So it's never been won since. So then now they're Oscar winners and Emmy winners. And I'm just going to quickly again get Kura to pop that on, because again, you'll start to realise you can hear their sound coming through. So yeah, Nurse Jackie, which was a series about a nurse who, again, is a stealth drug addict, but was a comedy, bizarre comedy drama. Yeah, so we'll give that a bash quickly now. Thanks, Kura.
Bye.
There you go. That was the theme music to Nurse Jackie, as composed by Lisa Common and Wendy Melvoin, Emmy-winning tune. And you really hear some of that kind of real kind of funk guitar and stuff coming through that they were famous for and that Prince fully took advantage of. So in 2004, they're working with Prince again. They'd never really fallen out with him properly. They always described him as kind of a sibling, almost like their little brother. They had fights, but they always got back together again. And in 2006, people like me got very, very excited because the Brit Awards, which is the British equivalent of the Grammys, they always had amazing live performances at the Brit Awards. A couple of my favourite ever musical performances, including one year they had the Andy Bell and Katie Lang singing Enough is Enough, No More Tears live, which was fantastic. And in 2006, Prince played live at the Brit Awards for the first time ever. And everyone freaked out. And they freaked out even more because on stage with him, he had Sheila E., the famous percussionist, and Wendy and Lisa. So this is the first time anyone had seen them perform together for 20 years. And they performed four songs, including Purple Rain and Let's Go Crazy. So as you can imagine, kind of all of us music nerds were besides ourselves with excitement. And that was just a fantastic, fantastic moment. In terms of their later work, like I say, they're carrying on doing their soundtrack work. They're still working on soundtracks now. They are, I think... most recently, what is it they've been working on most recently? I'll come back to me. But again, lots of TV stuff. So my brain's gone blank. But yeah, I'll come back to me at some point. But back to the Joni Mitchell thing. So with Joni Mitchell, obviously massive fans, particularly Lisa Coleman and Wendy Melvoin. And Joni Mitchell, in her later years, had been quite unwell. And as part of her recuperation, her and some friends had organised a thing where they would go around to her house once a month and have what they called Joni Jams. And they would sing songs mm-hmm. with her because she'd had a brain injury and to kind of help her recover. And these were organised by Brandi Carlile. But the people that went to them regularly who lived in LA included, of course, Lisa Coleman and Wendy Melvoin. So these Joni Jams morphed into, in 2022, Joni Mitchell making an appearance at the Newport Folk Festival, which is the first time anyone had seen her sing live for an astonishing amount of time. And everyone was completely blown away by the fact that Joni Mitchell had reappeared. And then they did a Joni Jam gig at the Hollywood Bowl in October 2024. And this gig, again, you can get hold of, see bits of this organised, recordings of this and video of this. And this gig involves Joni Mitchell, Brandi Carlile, and all of their mates having a good sing-song. And their mates include people like Sarah McLachlan, Annie Lennox, and Wendy and Lisa. So there they are again, up there, kind of amongst this, the real kind of the top of the top of women artists at the time. I say they've worked with everybody, or they have worked with everybody and still do work with everybody, from Eric Clapton to Madonna. You know, there isn't not many people that they haven't worked with. They've worked on, if you go into Spotify or if you go into Tidal and just look up their credits, the list is almost endless. Even if you just count the amounts of cover versions of Sometimes It Snows in April, their songs have been recorded by hundreds and hundreds of people. But they're still heavily involved in actually rights, human rights work and stuff like that. So I did mention briefly in my blurb on Facebook about the reason that I'm here talking to you today. And the reason I'm here talking to you today is because me and Sue became friends through social media, through Twitter, as it was back in the day. And I got onto Twitter back in 2009, just before my eldest son was born. Because when you're stuck at home with a baby, life's very boring. And so the easiest thing to do would to be noodle about online. And I found myself basically, because I was up at funny hours, noodling about online with various people from overseas. And you go on, when Twitter first started, you didn't really know who was on it. So you just go and see, look up people, see if they were there. And Lisa Coleman and Wendy Melvoin were on Twitter. And so I was like, oh, I'll follow them. That'll be a laugh. And they used to chat to people. And they would actually, if you sent them something, they'd actually reply and be like, what? I'm talking to Wendy and Lisa. Oh, my God. So Wendy and Lisa were on Twitter, which is why I got onto Twitter and why I stayed on Twitter. And that's how I met Sue, which is how I ended up coming on to the show to talk about ancient Egypt, because that was what the other thing I nerdly obsessed with. So, again, it's this kind of really weird small world thing. And that's where you start to, again, that's how I found out that they had spent time in New Zealand, because they're like, oh, where are you? I'm in New Zealand. Oh, whereabouts? We spent time at Neil Finn's place. I was like, what? You've been to New Zealand? Yeah, yeah, it's really nice. Okay. Yeah, it's kind of this whole, hey, all right, that's really weird. At the time, they had separately had quite small children. And so they now own a couple. Have you ever heard of, is it Fat Cat and Fish Face? There are a couple of women from Wellington who make up silly songs for children, but they're really funny, silly songs. And they did this really entertaining album. And I sent them a copy of Fat Cat and Fish Face CD. So I know that Lisa Coleman played that to her kid when they were little. So this really weird small world thing again. But yeah, really nice, lovely people. When Prince passed away in 2016, because Prince had been very tight about control of his music, what he had license to, you couldn't really use any of it. But once he died, his back catalogue, I think, got released to the public, which meant that the Revolution reformed and they now tour independently playing Prince songs. So you can see the Revolution play live if you're lucky enough and you get to the right place. But this also meant that they could use his songs for charitable purposes. And what they have worked on, so going right in a big circle right back to Purple Rain. Purple Rain, one of the first songs that they performed at Wendy's first gig with the Revolution, this gig in August 1983, was I Would Die For You. And now this song, with their permission and recorded with them, alongside a trans singer called Lauren Order, is on an album that's produced by the Red Hot organisation, who first came about to raise money for AIDS research back in, I think, 1989 or 90. Released an album a couple of years ago, Transa. And one of the songs on that, say, Wendy, Lisa and Lauren Order, is their cover version of I Would Die For You. And we're going to play out with that. Thank you so much for listening. It's been a pleasure. I could do this again. I could talk about Wendy and Lisa for hours. Maybe I will another day. And have a lovely, lovely day. See you soon.
And just a note that you're listening to the Quilted Bananas radio show on Access Radio 106.1 FM.
That you'll never understand. I'll never be true, I'll never lie. And if you're evil, I'll forgive you by and by. Cause you, I would die for you. And darling, if you want me to, I would die for you. No, I'm not your lover, I'm not your friend. I am something that you'll never comprehend. No need to worry, no need to cry. I'm your messiah and the other reason why. Cause you, well, I wouldn't die for you. And darling, if you want me to, I wouldn't die for you. Cause you, I would die for you.
Oh, human, I'm a dove. I'm a conscious, I'm love. See, all I really need is to know that you believe. But I wouldn't die for you.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.